Welcome to Auckland Library's Heritage Talks. This series is a celebration of personal and shared identity, exploring the people, places and events that have shaped us both at home and abroad. Join us for our regular lunchtime sessions at Tāmaki Pātaka Kōrero, Central City Library, or right here, whenever you like. Now, grab a cup of tea, sit back and enjoy. In the following two talks, local historian Lisa Trutman looks at the history of the Waihoretū stream and then, in a follow-up presentation, brings to life some of the pioneering inhabitants of Auckland and their work developing the infrastructure of the city we know today.
Much to this. I was not aware that this was going to get as involved as it did when I was asked to give this talk by Shona. She suggested this as a topic and I thought, oh, this has been covered a lot in various books and places and stuff on the internet. It became more involved. It's even involved me taking a trip down to Wellington and risking life and limb down in the provinces and their archives and see it is the provinces compared to here. But I'm glad that I did. The Queen Street Valley, through which the stream runs, was formed geologically through a process of uplift, erosion, and silting. That is very general. I'm not a geologist. I can't go into Bruce Hayward-style lectures as to all the various volcanic events and about a millennia and what happened. But in general, from 16 to 22 million years ago, the ancient Waitakere volcano was active, and that led to the formation of what was called the Waitemata Basin. Everything was underwater. Everything you know as the isthmus was all underwater. West Auckland was underwater. All that part was the Waitemata Basin. 15 million years ago, there was a general uplift, and everything rose up above the sea. And according to some sources, they say some rippling took place, and that is why we have the ridges across the isthmus. And there are two particular ridges which deal with this story, the Rangapuke Ridge and the Karangahape Ridge. Apparently they were formed when this rippling was taking effect. There is a third one, the one to the west, which has no name. And it's part of the general watershed of Te Waihoretū. It is the ridge along Hobson Street, leading down to what used to be called Smales Point at the end of Albert Street. There was a settlement which, according to tradition, the path leading up to that was up Swanson Street, and the settlement was Tarapunamu. Perhaps we could call that ridge line Tarapunamu, but at the moment it does not have a known Māori name. Around 60,000 years ago, but nobody has a very good idea exactly when or what happened, a relatively small volcano erupted in the middle of the city, what became the city centre, and that's the red circle there. It's known as the Albert Park volcano, but that is kind of a misnomer because it was at the very northwest corner of Albert Park, in between what is now the Victoria Street car park and Courthouse Lane. It was a relatively small vent. It wasn't active for very long, and most of its cone and most of the remains that says, hey, there is a volcano that took place, has long since eroded away. And most traces of it had actually disappeared even before the Māori arrived here as well. But traces of it have been found. There's lava flows extending down Victoria Street, I suspect down Vulcan Lane as well, definitely where Freiburg Place is, would have been part of the path where the lava would have gone down into what was Te Waihoretū's creek bed then, which would have been the Queen Street Valley, pushing things towards the west, including water, which is why you'll see in other maps coming up that Te Waihoretū in its original state had that kink. Almost, you know, close to the end, close to the foreshore, a strange kink that strangely went west and then veered back out again. That could have been through part of this action. But again, as I say, here's a caveat, I'm not a geologist, I'm not a volcanologist, and I'm still frantically trying to read up and understand what's been going down. The larger block that you see there was the ashfall from that vent, and it was quite considerable. It covered Albert Park. It covered most of what we know there as the lower part of Simon Street, and it terminated sort of at the Queen Street area, the Victoria Street, Wellesley Street area. So it was pretty extensive for its time, but I say it largely vanished. This comes from one of the files that's available here in the library in the research centre. And I'm sorry, librarians, I lost track of the exact reference and everything else, but it came from here. It's not exactly accurate, but it's based on Felton Matthews' first plan of the city of Auckland from 1840, when he outlined roughly where the stream actually flowed. And he was quite right, it has all these tributaries coming through from the Karangahape Ridge here to the south, and the other watershed mark, of course, was Simon Street and going through. But as I say, some of them were also issuing from down from the Hobson Street rise as well, through Albert Street. The true Horatio stream may have been that which stemmed between St. Paul and Wellesley Streets. And that is, like, ironically, that's where the Marae is, which was built by and put up by AUT in 1997, nearly 20 years ago now. And this would fit, actually, one of the Māori translations of the name from the word horo, which means landslide. Like the horo they've just had at Birkenhead. Yeah. Why Horatia? However, the name has been applied to a number of spots around Auckland. It's been noted down that the name could have come from a chief. It could be the Horatiu Taniwha. It could have been the name of the settlement, which was Albert Park, and there was a settlement with middens and with food storage areas and everything else that they noted when they did some archaeological digging on Albert Park. It could have been the name of a known settlement they believed it was on the town hall site, and it could even have been the name of a settlement perhaps further back near the junction of the Rangipuke Ridge, the Simon Street, Albert Park Ridge, and the Karangahape. Older sources identified Commercial Bay, what we now know as mainly downtown, where Britomart is and everything else. They identify that as Horatiu Bay. These days, though, the City Rail Link documentation calls it Oneparea Bay, which is the beach of the heads in line. Because one time, one iwi got really annoyed at another iwi, and there was a battle, and as a result of the battle, they stuck the heads basically on pikes. In a nice line along the beach, that is a warning if you come anywhere near our mana whenua again. So, now, that's not me having a go at Māori, because the Europeans certainly did that in spades and loads of times. This is a painting by Ashworth from 1843, and it possibly shows the end of the Queen Street lava flow from the Albert Park volcano. It was a rocky ledge in Fort Street, this ledge here. That was known, and that was recorded at the time in the contemporary accounts as a known landing place. Now, the interesting thing is that there is a site that's actually on the heritage schedule, a Wahi Tapu site called Te Whatu. And they've located that just south of Shortland Street. I personally believe Te Whatu was there, because it's just south of Shortland Street. You're getting a bit far to have it as a landing place, unless you had a major flood. We kind of felt Matthew. Here's another man that I kind of thought was pretty well open and shut. Everybody knows Felton Matthew. Came here, first surveyor general, surveyed the first plan for Auckland, lost his job in 1842 when C.W. Liger turned up. He was postmaster general for a wee while. He was the head of the police for a wee while. Then he campaigned for getting his jobs properly acknowledged in England, came back, and George Grey says, nah. There's actually a bit more to him than that, and typically with the story. 4th of October 1840, while he and the few men he could gather up to act as surveyors, essentially they weren't surveyors, they were whoever he could find that could actually hold something up so he could take measurements. It's one of the things he serious complaints about when he had next to no department, and he was a naval officer of substantial rank and he deserved better than this. I have seen his ranting letter. I have photographed it from the Wellington archives. It's a delight to behold. And I thought to myself, I can understand that. Anyway, his men set fire to the scrub somewhere between Mount Eden and the city centre, and the scrub fire got out of control. Went all the way down the Queen Street Valley, nearly took out the initial small custom house they had at the end of the foreshore, and managed to save that. Luckily enough, you know, lucky for them, but they were actually next to no buildings in between where they set the fire and the custom house, and they were able to sort things through. But I thought myself, my gosh. But the fact that there was a fire and it roared down, there was low brush and low bush along the foreshore of the stream at that point. And in November 1840, he had the idea to set aside reserves, lower market reserve at the end of Shortland Street and Fort Streets, as well as his idea for a reservoir, which would have taken him Myers Park at least. He wanted to actually dam the stream, dam Te Waihorotia, form this humongous reservoir out of the natural contours of the land, and that would serve as the water supply for the new settlement in Auckland. And that never happened. I would say money would be a big excuse why it didn't happen. All the time in the early days, they were very tightly budgeted. They were expecting money to be coming in from land sales, and a lot of the money didn't actually come in from land sales as quickly as they would have liked. His appointment as Surveyor General was from the outset temporary. Hobson arrived in Sydney and was told, pick four men and take those men, they'll be your public service when you go over to the other place, New Zealand. And he was one of the four men that was picked. All four of them were temporary appointments. Unfortunately, Felton Matthew thought he was permanent. It was because his appointment was approved and everything else by the governor in New South Wales, in Sydney. So he thought, oh, this means I'm permanent. No, he was always temporary. Which is why, back home, they then, at the beginning of 1841, February 1841, they tapped C.W. Liger on the shoulder and says, you're the new Surveyor General for this colony of New Zealand, go to it. When Felton Matthew found that out, he was gutted. I can understand that. But they said, you can have these other two jobs. So he went ahead and did these other two jobs, Postmaster General, Chief Police Magistrate. But unfortunately, as I said, when Governor Grey took over from Robert Fitzroy later on, in 1845, when Felton Matthew came back with Lord Stanley from England saying, yes, by Jove, you're a good man, you can have those positions. Governor Grey had already got somebody else as the Chief Police Magistrate and wasn't interested in the Postmaster General at that stage and says, no, sorry, you're out of a job. So, bit of a broken man. He stayed on until 1847 and left, and he died on the voyage to Lima, Peru. That's just the way things happened with poor old Felton Matthew. Better feel sorry for him in that respect. Times actually don't change terribly much. During the delay in Liger's appointment and his arrival, he didn't arrive until December 1841 in Wellington. Thomas Cleghorn, who was the superintendent of the domain, in those days the domain wasn't just the Auckland domain, it also included Albert Park, because that's where Government House was, promised to supply material for two open drains to Alex Mackay. Well, he didn't end up actually supplying the materials. I looked through the papers and thought to myself, there's no materials. Mr. Mackay kept complaining, where's the stuff? No, he didn't turn up, probably because ran out of money. Also, before Liger got here, they set about building the courthouse and jail site. Work began on this in October of 1841. Now this site is the only site along the stream bed of Te Waihorotia that's ever been properly archaeologically studied, investigated and reported by Simon Best and his team in the late 1980s. And the report came out in the early 1990s. And all the buildings that have gone up and down and sideways along the stream, nobody else actually did a proper archaeological investigation, which is a shame. But at least we do have a snapshot of some of the details of the stream from that site. The site's also notable for having this bridge, which was built a bit later, quite a bit later, about a decade later than the actual courthouse buildings themselves. Yes, Victoria Street, where traffic comes up and down all the day, had a ditch, and a bridge. The only way you could get across down that street was via the bridge. It was wide enough for carts, so it wasn't essentially a footbridge, and it really was a timber culvert. There is a report later of a cart, just before that was all fixed up, a cart, the driver didn't actually aim properly for the bridge, caught beside of it, then the cart went tipsy-woo and the horse ended up half in the ditch. The horse is fine though, but I looked at that, they didn't have to put the horse down, the horse was fine. And he was fine, he just lost quite a bit of his stuff out of the cart. So you had to aim very carefully. And in the days of horse street lights, that would not have been an interesting, a pleasant thing to go through at night time. Charles Wybrow Liger, the name from which we know the stream, and we've called it ever since, as the Liger Canal. He was appointed in England in February of 1841. His appointment was confirmed in 1842, once he finally made it here. He left Portsmouth on the New Zealand Company ship, the Prince Rupert, in April of 1841. That's the arrows coming down. And he ended up getting shipwrecked off the Cape Town coast in September. That's why I've got the generic shipwreck image at the bottom. He eventually completed the journey to Wellington on the Antilla, arriving in December of 1841 with five assistant surveyors. A number of them must have got to Felton Matthew, because he was basically by himself, having his wife take notes for him. And this guy turned up with a course with a complete department. Thomas Cleghorn again. They interchanged the titles and the responsibilities a lot during the early period. He was de facto superintendent of public works from April 1842. And that month, with Liger now based in Auckland, he prepared the first specs for a drain in Shortland Street and Queen Street. Now, I do think that this was the first part of the Liger Canal. It's not called the Cleghorn Canal, though. And it wasn't even called the Liger Canal then. The only person who complained about it was J.J. Montefiore, who had a big warehouse down that part of Queen Street, just in between Wyndham Street just south of Swanson Street. And that's his complaint. With regard to Queen Street, the only attempted improvement was by cutting one open drain at the edge of the street, rendering the approach to the said allotments impassable without risking a fall into a muddy ditch and attempting to jump over it. I think basically the government was saying, we'll put this ditch in, you guys sort out the bridges. That, I think, is the beginnings of the Liger Canal. And then I found this wonderful plan in Wellington. I'm sure other people have seen this, but when I saw this, I thought myself, this is fabulous. This is a plan actually produced by John Collingwood Hale. And there's a detail of it which really excited me. There was me in the middle of Wellington National Archives trying to be restrained because you must be quiet. It was like, the reason being is that we've got this line marked creek, which is Te Waihora to you, and this line marked drain. That's the original Liger Canal. That's the original drain. Now, it could well have been the drain that was started by Thomas Cleghorn, and Hale's plan, the purpose of it, was actually to drain the eastern side and try to get rid of the swampy area, which was just to the south of Vulcan Lake. The main issue they had was trying desperately to sort out the swampy areas that weren't on the west so much, where the Te Waihora Tia was. They were on the east, Shortland Crescent, Vulcan Lane, the east side of Queen Street, the part where the lava was. And where there were the tongues of lava, water was backing up and behind it and causing the swamp, soft, swampy ground. This is what they actually wanted to drain. And their idea was to put in drains and then channel all the water into a drain across on the west. And that was what the people termed derisively the canal. Because it was a substantial size and it was a substantial depth, and Sometimes it was filled with water, but basically it was like, oh yeah, this is fancy project of Ligers, Ligers Gulf, G-U-L-P-H. Love that spelling. Ligers Canal, Ligers Drain, the canal part stuck. Now, Hale himself, how many here have ever heard of him? John Collingwood Hale. Now, his plan, shown against the rest of the stream, give you a bit of an idea of what I was getting excited about. The stream across Victoria Street went underneath the allotments to a certain time, crossed over Durham Street, still pretty well under these allotments. This is why this map is not quite accurate. The stream was actually over here a bit more. Came out just before Wyndham Street, and then started going inwards again. Now this is where Hale and Cleghorn chose to put their drain, starting from there. So the drain, the Liger Canal drain, was in red, and Hale's additional drainage plan is the part in green. Any confusion so far? You see why I need to do a research paper, right? Yep. To stop accidents, this is another lovely plan I've found from Wellington. The drain in Queen Street was covered over with rough planks known as coarse deals. Now I will say this very slowly, it's like St. Edward Woodward's name, coarse deals. Deal being the old term for very rustic, rough cut planks of wood. These though quickly rotted out. Now this is a plan for extending the drain further along Wyndham Street, because I know there's a handy arrow for the flow of the water, so yes, it's flowing from south to north. The planks would rot out, horses' hooves would suddenly drop down through the rotted planks. People's feet would drop down through the rotted planks as well. There are stories from 1864 of the canal being navigable to Wyndham Street. I dare anybody tell me how that could be navigable to Wyndham Street. But the story arrived from Edward Cossley, the same man who was later famous for giving a whole heap of bequests once he died in the 1880s. Anyway, he had one case in the 1860s, having an argument with somebody else about buildings down Queen Street, very close to the original line of the stream. One chap had built his building just a few inches over the border, over the boundary. Huge argument. Anyway, as the course of the court case, he was describing the original waterway, setting up the boundary pegs and making sure the boundary pegs didn't get washed out from the tide and all this sort of thing, which is wonderful for us researchers. And in the middle of it, he said, of course, you know the stream was navigable up to Wyndham Street. And everybody in the courtroom just fell about themselves with laughter. Because they knew damn well that was ridiculous. Unfortunately, as you'll see later, that's really come to be part of the it was navigable up to Wyndham Street. Another Edward Ashford image from 1843. The Waterloo Bridge, dated from this time, was erroneously located by some sources on the eastern side of Queen Street. That's when people believe that the Liger Canal was either in the middle of Queen Street or on the east. No, it was on the west. So yeah, there were lots of stories of the Waterloo Bridge. One story even said that, oh, the reason why the Liger Canal is called that way because Mrs. Liger fell off the Waterloo Bridge one night. In 1913, there came a story published in the New Zealand Herald. They dated it 1863. I think it's more 1853, or somewhere in between. And it's a story about a boy, pastry shop, and his penny. And this is exactly the wording of the article in the New Zealand Herald. Weird tales used to be told to children about the Liger Canal. Naughty little boys, or little boys who were capable of being naughty, used to be awed into good behaviour by their parents' threat that if they offended, they would be handed over to the boogeyman in the hole. The latter was the aforesaid Liger Canal. A story is told by an old pioneer who was a lad of tender years, showing how he at least was impressed by this fearsome threat. This lad one day had a penny to spend. A whole penny. He wended his way into Queen Street, and stood gazing in the window of a pastry cook shop situated near where the Herald building came to be. Nothing was too good for that boy. His penny represented untold wealth. And look at all this goodies in the window. What am I going to pick? For a long time, he inspected the stock of cakes and confectionery temptingly spread out for him. Then he dropped his precious copper down a crack in the planking over the Liger Canal. As luck would have it, though, a man happened to be just below in a boat. Darn small boat. Anyway, the penny fell at his feet and he picked it up, opening a trap door in the wooden sidewalk. The salver thrust out his head and shoulders and extended the recovered coin towards its small owner. Here you go, boy, this is your penny. And the boy, however, thought the sudden apparition was the bogeyman. The one his mother had so often told him about. With a wild cry, he turned and fled, leaving his penny to its fate. I have to get through this quickly because we're starting to run out of time. I know people, you know, have other things to do. 1844, David Rough was superintendent of public works, and part of the drain, as I say, was covered with more coarse steel timber. Smithson of the Ship's Inn got in trouble for damming part of the drain on his property, told to remove it. 1845, Frederick Thatcher was superintendent of public works, and in July there was a severe flood, which was from the courthouse right down to the beach. Rita Wood, superintendent of public works in 1848, organised a drain across Queen Street for an outfall at Fort Street, 1849, which is the orange line there. Now that drain also was not a bricked-in drain. It was lined with scoria on the bottom and on the sides and covered with timber. 1851, we had the brief Auckland Borough, and everybody thought, it's their problem now. But the Auckland Borough didn't last terribly long. And in 1852, the Auckland Provincial Council came into existence and everyone said, no, it's your problem now. Basically, this was much of the 19th century history of the Liger Canal and Te Waiharatea. The Provincial Council Committee in 1853 reported that a sewer line along Queen Street is needed. No kidding. They had a competition. Huge arguments. George Vail put in a lovely design for a sewer right in the smack of the middle of the street, which would not have worked. And then he got really tetchy when people didn't take up his idea for the design. First City Council in 1854. Alan O'Neill was appointed their city surveyor. They made the first attempt at the Queen Street sewer of brick and stone with the contractor's white watch horn. It failed to proceed beyond excavation because they made some errors with the levels. Street was there, sewer was there. Considerable joking made of this across the Tasman. It was in a lot of articles in Troy. Considerable jokes were made about this. That was not the reason the first city council ceased, but it didn't help. 1856, responsibility back to the Auckland Provincial Council. They decided, look, we're not going to have any more of this mucking about. We're going to get this done properly. They had Rita Wood back looking at things, and he was very sensible what he did. And he decided to extend the Liger Canal across what was then the Custom Street Reclamation from Fort Street through to Custom House Street overland, in a wooden trough on poles. Everybody thought that was complete madness, but that was so that the water would meet one of three barrel drains which was set in just underneath the road that they were forming. Somebody asked me online, are those barrel drains still there? I thought, get a pickaxe and have a look. Dare you? 1860, by that time the Queen Street sewer had reached Shortland Street. So all those documentaries you see of people saying, we've gone down the Liger Canal and there's these brick walls and whatnot, they're in the sewer. They're really in the real sewer. 1861, James Inglis was awarded a contract to continue the sewer up Queen Street, so the Green Line is progressing. He assaulted a Queen Street jeweller who said, "Hey, mate, are you doing that properly outside my shop?" Boof. Mr. Inglis lost his contract. That's why I need to do a research paper, because this is just gorgeous. 1862, the City Board of Works was established. James Stewart was appointed as a city engineer, and the contract was awarded to John Taylor. Then there was an accident which caused the death to Dennis Newman. There was two workmen, they fell into the workings of the sewer, into the actual dugout part itself. Dennis Newman broke his leg, and infection got him and everything else. He died later on in hospital. He's the only person that I've been able to find who died during the construction of that Queen Street sewer, that initial construction. But it's quite good for the 19th century. Unfortunate for Dennis, though. Taylor dropped out and was replaced by Rhodes and Gunn, and they continued the contract all the way through to Wellesley Street. In 1863, the Board of Works was replaced by the City Board of Commissioners. Now, this was the direct ancestor of the Auckland City Council. In 1864, the diversion from Te Waihoroteo to the sewer at the Haymarket was completed, up here just north of Durham Street. At that point, people then started complaining. People have been complaining, remember, about the drain outside their properties, down Queen Street, bit of a pain. As soon as that drain was gone and it was all no longer flowing, it was flowing naturally into the east side of the Queen Street sewer, and then they said, "We've got no more water to fight fires now." Aww. You never please everybody. You just can't. Construction began on the Union Bank of Australasia at the corner of Victoria Street West and Queen Street in 1863. And the bank also were no nonsense. "We're going to sort this business of this waterway that's underneath our basement. We will pay to the powers that be for the special drainage coming down Victoria Street and linking in with the Queen Street sewer." The city board says, "Oh yes, please. Great. That's money we can save." So they sorted that out. So there was a channeling of the water once that was completed. There was still water flowing to a certain extent, but once that was done, the flow of the stream down that from that part of Queen Street was extremely restricted. 1864, the Board of Commissioners appointed George Frassi as city engineer. In brief, he was employed as a city engineer for all of about 3 months. And then they really lost their temper with him because he couldn't do multiple projects at one time. He was buying stone breaking equipment for Mount Eden, and the only thing the equipment broke was itself. He was running up debts with the optometrists for telescopes and everything else, and then saying to the board, "You pay for it." So they thought, "Yeah, look, we can't deal with you." Little did they know, he was not a civil engineer. He was not an engineer of any sort. He actually was an iron founder by trade back in England, and he had been in prison for 18 months for forgery. So I would say, guess where his references probably came from. By 1865, yes, you can see the Green Line extending up, and it finally reached Wellesley Street. Then they started working on the Marketplace Reserve, which became the Marketplace Reserve after they gave up on where the Victoria Arcade was. They decided to do a proper drain right through the middle of the Marketplace Reserve and then down Wellesley Street, connecting in with the Queen Street sewer. Hopefully, they believed, therefore blocking off most of the water flowing through here. They did do that. They completed it by 1867. And the market building was erected in the early 1870s, until 1874, when part of it started collapsing because they realised the drain was collapsing. So they quickly shored things up and got things fixed up along those lines. Further work was done in the 1870s when they finally tamed the remainder of the stream, which was meandering a bit, going towards the courthouse in the jail site, and the City Council, by that stage, City Council came into effect in 1871, said, right, we're not having any more of this, let's cover it, get the owners to actually straighten things out, and it's all done. You can't see really any traces of that anymore. The last trace of it was when Simon Best did his work in the late 1980s, and he found the stream bed itself, where it all got obliterated with the new development. What was Aotea Centre today used to be the swamp from where a lot of the water flow was, and in the 1928 it was a paddock. Now you would think that this might be the New Zealand Herald having a bit of fun and a bit of satire. Not completely. This whole area was cleared of buildings by one of the mayors and one of his grand ideas for a civic centre, which didn't take place because the ratepayer said, you're not having our money. But it's not satire. There's a photo of the site of the civic theatre, and that's grass that they're raking and mowing. So yeah, it was a bit of a rural area. Would it be nice, wouldn't it be nice? Nice green reserve. Having the theatre there is nice, but having a bit of an extra green would have been nice too. There are words remembering the Liga Te Waho Atiu inscribed in the steps leading up to the Central Library. Are they still there or they removed them? The words still there? I think nobody's tampered with them, maybe crashed a car into them or anything. Good, excellent. So that's great, that's fine. And there's also a recent addition to Myers Park, which is the installation very close around the pack, what used to be the kids' paddling pool, and the changing sheds/toilets. But if you want to see the real Te Waho Atiu, that's it, in Myers Park. Not as pretty, but it's at the end. You do have an opportunity of hearing the water running along the same course, though. So if you go there, you can hear the water running. You are hearing the stream, the Te Waho Atiu stream underground. So how hidden is this really? That's the map today. This comes from the GeoMap site. And you think, oh yeah, can't see a damn thing. Well, when you start looking at the overland flow paths, you see this. In heavy rain, in downpours, these are the water flow paths across central Auckland. And this is Te Waho Atiu, going very close to the original layout of the stream, as we've seen from Felton Matthew, as we've seen from Mr. O'Malley. So I actually take heart to that. I mean, I don't take heart of us getting floods or having more horrible incidents like Birkenhead, but it does. If anyone says to you it doesn't exist anymore, yes it does. You cannot stop water flowing. The water will continue to flow no matter what. So thank you very much for listening.